I'd like to welcome everyone out to our Bible study this evening. We're going to continue with the glorious series, the glorious gospel, and from Mac Lyons. And tonight we're going to be covering lesson 5, the gospel of the kingdom. And as my tradition, I'd like to go over a few verses before we get started to set our mindset for the class, our hearts. Proverbs 4:23. Keep thine heart with all diligence, for out of it are the issues of life. And of course, that points towards the four soils that are mentioned in Luke chapter 8. We pray that everyone has that fertile soil that's mentioned there. And then the focus for the class, where your mind, we want your mind to be, and even in your day-to-day life, is from Philippians 4:8. Finally, brethren, whatsoever things are true, whatsoever things are honest, whatsoever things are just, whatsoever things are pure, whatsoever things are lovely, whatsoever things are good report, if there be any virtue and if there be any praise, think on these things. Wonderful, wonderful, wonderful mindset there. And lastly, our prayer for the class from Psalms 139, 23 and 24. Search me, O God, and know my heart. Try me and know my thoughts, and see if there be any wicked way in me, and lead me in a way everlasting. Remove whatever is keeping me from thinking the right way. Dean, would you open us up with a word of prayer, please?
Lord our God, Lord.
Thanks, Dean. Am I louder than usual? Because I know I'm a loud person, so yeah. Was that a yes or a no? Ba-boom, boom. Thanks, David. And of course, tonight, this is just a table of content, what you guys have been covering in here. I've been with Larry back there. I missed his class last quarter covering in between the testaments. And tonight we're going to cover the gospel of the kingdom. The gospel of the kingdom. And who has Matthew 4:23? Read that for us, please. Okay, smart guy, the one who had the jokes a few minutes ago. Does yours say read from the slide?
Yes, you did.
Uh-huh. Can't follow instructions, but that's okay. The gospel of the kingdom. Who has Luke 8:1? Please read that for us, please. And go ahead and hit us again with the next version there, Daryl. The gospel of the kingdom from Matthew 4:23. Glad tidings from Luke 8 from the New King James. And good news from the ESV version for Luke 8. The gospel in Matthew chapter 4:23 is a noun. And the other ones are just the verb form of that particular word. But they mean glad tidings. Good news. The good news of the kingdom. Imagine yourself as a Jewish person in the first century. God has stopped talking to you, you know, before the New Testament, from the Old Testament. You know the prophecies. Genesis 12:2. Read that one for me, please. Who has that one? Whoever has that one. I will make you a great nation. That was the message to Abram before he was the father for the nation of Israel. But that's the precursor for the nation of Israel coming into play. I will make you a great nation. Daniel 2:44.
Crushed and put against all his own. But it is, but it will itself, forever.
At the time, the Israelites were in exile, being captives to Nebuchadnezzar. But the prophecy was the kingdom will never be destroyed. And John the Baptizer, Matthew 3:2, read that for us, please. Matthew 3:2. And what did it say, please? Repent, for the kingdom of heaven is at hand. It's near. And Matthew 4:17, please.
From that time, Jesus began to preach and to say, repent, for the kingdom of heaven is at hand.
So, you're a Jewish person in the first century. You know these things. What was said to Abraham? The other prophecies while the nation was in exile. And now here comes John saying the kingdom as is at hand. Jesus says the same thing. You're really excited because the kingdom is near. You're excited because you're thinking Jesus is going to restore the nation of Israel back to his glory. But sadly, that's not what Jesus was talking about. Acts chapter 1, verses 3 through 9, please. So Jesus has been murdered, buried, resurrected, and he's giving them the final instructions. And in verse 3 is one key point, is why he's there. It specifically says he's talking to them about things pertaining to the kingdom. What was their question to him? When will the kingdom be restored? Okay, they were not getting exactly what he was talking about. He told them, now is not the time. Then they saw him ascend up into heaven. And lastly, or not second to last, Mark 9:1. This is a parallel text for Matthew chapter 17, which comes at the end of Matthew 16, where he told them that Peter's going to have the keys to the kingdom after Peter's great confession. And he said, the gates of hell shall not prevail against my church, and you're going to get the keys to the kingdom. And then he continues on, and he says that the kingdom is going to come, and it's going to come with power. And some of you guys standing here will not taste death till you see the kingdom come. And lastly, John 18:36. Jesus told them that his kingdom was not of this earth. But you fast forward on to Acts chapter 1, they're still asking about an earthly kingdom. We don't always get everything the first time around. So we can't necessarily just give them a hard time just because they missed it. They eventually got it, but they missed it up front. So what is the true good news or glad tidings of the kingdom? That's one. That's pointing more towards a couple of lessons ago whenever you guys had the glory of the Christ, the gospel of the Christ. But excellent point. Anyone else? Good news, the glad tidings of the kingdom. Forgiveness of sin. Trey. The gospel is for all. Terry. We have a way to be with God. That's the path we're going to march down right there, as far as we have a way to be with God. The good news of the kingdom / church. For the sake of argument right now, we're going to say the kingdom and the church are the same thing. We know biblically speaking, they are the same thing. But we're not here to prove that point exactly right now. That's just our foundation where we're going forward. Colossians 1, 13 through 14. Read that for us, please. What are some key points here that you see in this passage? That was one of the first things that jumped out to me. We're no longer living in darkness. What's man's greatest problem? No hope. Anyone else? Sin. Redemption. Forgiveness of sins. Being transferred from the domain of darkness into what? The kingdom of his beloved son. Trey, did you? Right. Taking us out of something bad and putting us up into something better. Acts 2:47. Who has that for us, please?
Praising God and having favor with all the people, and the Lord added to the church daily those who were being saved.
Who is part of the kingdom church? Who's part of the church according to this passage? And who are we in this particular case from Acts chapter 2? Or what you see on the passage there? What's their status, if you want to say? The saved. The good news of the kingdom is you're being transferred from darkness into light. You are saved. You are part of this vehicle that's going to go to heaven. John 8:18-36. What's the significance of Jesus' kingdom not being part of this world, not having an earthly kingdom? Has the ability to last forever. Whenever man has his hands on things, what do we sometimes, when in our own devices, what do we have a tendency to do? Mess it up. And we do a pretty good job of messing some stuff up. Lasting forever. Hebrews 12:28. Did I give that to someone? All right. The good news. You're part of a kingdom that will not be shaken, that cannot be destroyed. Going back to Daniel chapter 2, verse 44, where it talks about this kingdom is going to last forever. Forever. Ephesians 1:22-23. Another benefit, another part of the good news. Christ is the head. And Christ and the church is his body. That is such a wonderful benefit. The church has the perfect husband. I'm trying to think of a joke, but I can't think of one about earthly husbands right now. But Christ is definitely the perfect husband. Or the church is the perfect, has the perfect husband. Ephesians 5, 23 through 32. Who has that for us, please? Amen. The perfect husband. In explaining to you exactly how a husband should be thinking from even an earthly perspective, it always jumps off the page to me. We're going on a side note here. In verse 28, in the same way husbands should love their wives as their own bodies, he who loves his wife loves himself. So no one ever hated his own flesh, but nourishes and cherishes it just as Christ does the church. To me, that's a message to us earthly husbands, of course, from the standpoint of how we're supposed to treat our wives in the sense of loving her like Christ loved the church. But it also brings up a very significant point in the sense of you got to be at peace with yourself. You got to love yourself. You have to remember that you are made in God's image. There's nothing not to love. So the more you love yourself, the more you're going to end up loving your wife with respect like what Christ has for the church. And because we are members of his body. The value of each member. Matthew 18:12. Who has that for us, please? That, my friends, is the good news of a wonderful shepherd. He will leave the 99 to go look for you. If you're lost, if you're the one, he looks for you. The gospel is personal. It really is. You can be concerned about what everybody else in this room is doing, but really at the end of the day, it comes down to you and what you're doing, with what you've been instructed with. In this particular case, you can see where the good shepherd, he will leave the 99 on the mountain and come look for you. I like you smiling about that. It's wonderful.
What's
it?
Okay.
Yeah. Okay, no problem. The value of each member. 1 Corinthians 12 through 27. Who has that for us, please? Keep going, John.
Yeah.
You know, whenever we meet with people who want a place membership here at Cary, the elders, that is, we have people fill out forms of what you can do or what you would like to do. And people have various interests, various talents. Just because a person just wants to, I say just wants to, or their interest is ensuring that the cars are filled here in the pews, is that any less important than ensuring that we have something done outside, the carpet is done, or we ensure that Robert ensures that he has people on the table? Are all of these things working to help us move forward? Yes. But those are physical things. You think about it, even if your talent might be reaching out to someone or whatever it happens to be, no one is more important than anyone else in here. It goes back to that point earlier. At the end of the day, it is about you and doing what, using your talents to the best of your ability to fulfill the commission of the Christ. Every one of us is just as important as anyone else in here. Neither Jew nor Greek, male nor female, free nor slave, we're all the same. I see that as great news, the good news of the kingdom that's come. The church is God's family. Ephesians 2:19. Who has that? What is the household of God? Another word for that is a family. A family. From what we covered so far, do you guys believe that these things are attainable in the sense of ensuring that no one feels like they're greater than anyone else, that you feel like a valued member of the Lord's church? You guys feel like that's attainable? No, yes, maybe. Mike's nodding his head yes. I'm glad to see yes. The rest of you really don't have an opinion or a thought about it? Bill. What Bill said is everyone has to, they go into Christ the same way. We all take the same steps. And going further with that, who did Christ say would be the greatest in his kingdom? Those who serve. Those who humble themselves. He's not looking for arrogant, haughty people. Matter of fact, those people usually won't humble themselves to submit to the Christ to do what needs to be done to become a Christian. The household of God. At the end of the day, guys, we're family. We really are. And I don't know if you guys have looked around, especially the United States, I guess if you want to say, and looked at our congregation compared to where some other places. We have a pretty unique situation here. Do you guys agree with that? Yeah. A very, very unique situation. Don't let anybody destroy us, and let's not destroy that from within. We're family. We can get along. We really can. And you know, if you have a problem with somebody, what are you supposed to do? Go tell Cody about it? No. You go talk to that person. We have a very, very great situation going on here at Cary. Let's remember we're family and talk about things. Oh, and the side note, I think it was Larry spoke Sunday whenever he was made the reference about dealing with issues, and he referred to something that took place in a college class where they said, you have to ensure you're not the problem when you want to go complain to somebody about something that's taking place. Problems are usually twofold. So let's make sure that we're not making a problem where there's not a problem. And again, we have a very, very unique situation here, and it's a wonderful thing. I'm happy to be part of this particular congregation. You have priority. You have priority. Galatians 6:10. What is that saying to us? Galatians 6:10. It's an opportunity for us to do good. But what's the rest of it? What is that telling us? Special emphasis on the household of faith, which means you come first. Who has Matthew? Well, before we go there, there was a point that I taught last quarter back in the smaller room, and I brought up a point. I guess it was the last class, and I'm making sure I say this right. It's interesting for someone who was not raised around the Lord's church to come into the Lord's church. A lot of folks who don't have family members generations after generation going back, they're usually separated from their families. And guess what? You're it. And then whenever you hear things like, don't you have physical family that can take care of you? That's not really the right answer from what I can see in the scriptures, in the sense that I am your brother or sister now. I might not have that physical family anymore. I'm ostracized in some cases. They don't want to help me, whether it's financial, mentally, and definitely I'm coming to you guys for spiritual help, because your mind should be on spiritual matters. Yes, Ms. Demet. Paul is saying that this is something that even Christ mentioned whenever he was 12. But that's going to be a point that we're going to raise actually here with Matthew chapter 12. Who has 46 through 50? Read that for us, please. It's all good. I have so many fathers and mothers and brothers and sisters, I can't begin to count. Why? Because I'm part of the church. And the same applies to each one of you. You have so many fathers and mothers and brothers and sisters. You might have lost your physical mother or brother or sister, whomever it happens to be, but you still have. And it's not just the people in this room. People travel outside of the United States. Yeah, me. Yeah. Do you attend worship service in some of these places? Yeah. Do you consider them your brethren? Yeah. And they embrace you. They're happy to see you. Whenever you travel up and down the highways and byways of the United States, do you stop to see your brethren? I mean, I know it's cool that we have an opportunity to be able to listen to Sunday mornings here online and so on and so forth. But that small congregation that has 10 people, and you walk in, the McCoys are probably like us, whenever we would show up, five people, man, you just made their day. Your brethren are happy to see you when you show up. They really, really are. Mike. Mike just brought up the significance of visiting smaller congregations. He said he preached for over 20 years at a particular congregation where it never got over 50?
15.
15, I'm sorry, over 15. And five people showing up. Yeah, that's significant to them. And to that point, you know, they will hang around just to talk to you. They really will. They really will. I love the story. We were traveling back to my hometown, Paducah, Kentucky, in our minds, once we get back into Tennessee, we can pretty much stop anywhere, especially on a Wednesday night or whatnot. And we stopped in Carthage, Tennessee, we drove a good ways off the interstate, if you want to say. We stopped at Mickey D's, grabbed something to eat, drove over to a church building, and we shut that place down. We were just like here. We were the last people to leave. And they were so, so, so excited to see us coming, you know, and leaving, if you will. They weren't happy to see us leave, but that's you guys around here. Man, can't wait for those Smiths to leave. But it was really, really wonderful to visit our brethren whenever traveling. And again, they love it whenever you show up. So I belabored that point enough. We know how the church is to be structured. 1 Timothy 3:14-15. You know how you should behave within the church family. What was he writing to them about previously in verses 1 through 13? Elders and deacons and their qualifications. What's the significance of that when it comes to the structure of the church? Leadership. Leadership. Why did Paul want Timothy to go to Titus, I think it was, to go to those congregations to do what? Whenever he was trying to appoint elders. So they would be organized. I'm thinking of one word. He was talking, leaning towards the churches, but Gene is right. The leadership, making them more mature. A church is hard. A particular congregation, it's hard for them to move forward without the proper leadership. It really is. And think about the qualifications of the people that are listed there at the top half of 1 Timothy 3. The qualifications of an elder. Those people, or those men, are giving spiritual advice, spiritual guidance for that particular congregation. Those of us who have been in congregations where there isn't any, where there's not an eldership, you have a bunch of men trying to give that advice, that's not good for the congregation in no way, shape, or form. They try. Trust me, I've been there. And it's really interesting to hear things play out and to hear the opinions taking place, because you don't necessarily have spiritually minded men trying to or having the congregation to move forward. And that's detrimental to the congregation. And then you continue on with not only the elders there, but with the deacons. And that's to take care of the task, if you want to say that, take place within a congregation. Like in Acts chapter 6. What was going on in Acts chapter 6 at the very beginning of the chapter? The Greek widows were not being taken care of. And what did the apostles ask to take place? Somebody other than Gene. I'm sorry? Appoint some people to the work, because the apostles needed to do what?
Keep their mind on the gospel.
They needed to keep their mind on the gospel and on spiritual things. Those are precursors to elders and deacons right there. The elders can keep their mind on the spiritual things, and the deacons can take care of the tasks that need to take place on a day-to-day basis. That's the structure of the church. That's just an example of the structure of the church. It eliminates confusion. How many of you guys have seen the sign on the side of the road that says, attend the church of your choice? Yeah. Ephesians 4:4-6. There's one body. And what's the body? The church. It eliminates confusion. It really does. Is there a difference between shopping based on cost and shopping based on value? What's the difference? This is a conversation that takes place in my house all the time. Sometimes you get what you pay for. Cheap stuff will fall apart.
Inexpensive is cheap.
What's shopping based on value? What is it? You look at all the pros and cons, and then you buy it based on the value, the worth of what you see there. The product in and of itself. Matthew 13:44-45. Who has that for us, please? What's common between these two men? They knew the value of what they had. They were willing to sell everything for the treasure. Everything for the treasure. They saw the value, the worth of the treasure that was in front of them. One man hid it, and then he gathered up all his money and came back and bought it. These men, they found what they were looking for. Well, it appears one stumbled upon it. And we know that there's an opportunity that people stumble upon the gospel. And once they see it, they hear it, they want to do any and everything they can to keep hold to it. And my time is running short. I think it should be the second bell. Here's a good read, guys. The value of the kingdom of heaven. And that's what prompted me for that previous slide. And that's by Wayne Jackson. And if you just Google that, and it's actually, if you go to the Christian Chronicles website, which is a playoff of the Notes from the Margins of My Bible by Wayne Jackson, this article, The Value of the Kingdom, spectacular, great, great read. And it's a really simple read, too. It's about a page and a half, if you want to say. My time is up, and I want to thank you, because it's 8 years. My time's up, and I want to thank each one of you for your time.